Psalm 62, I'll be there for you. It's a psalm of friendship. Wonderful to have friends. It's a real blessing. Someone who sticks with you no matter what. Someone who helps you. Someone who is there for you. Someone who loves you. And Psalm 62 is all about friendship. But friendship at the highest possible level. It's the friendship between Almighty God and a human being called King David. But it could be any one of us. And it's a psalm about a time when David was on the verge of collapse and God kindly came to him and helped him, supported him, restored him, and renewed him. And this psalm is David's testimony about how God did all that for him. David wants people to know what God has done for him. So what God had done for him in secret, David wants to make public. He tells people to trust in the Lord, verse 8. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge. It's a real personal psalm, this. The personal pronouns, I, me, my, they're mentioned 21 times in this psalm. Simply read verses 5, 6, and 7 to begin with. Verse 5. Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from him. Truly he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. My salvation and my honor depend upon God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. 9 times, just in those 3 verses, David is saying about this great God, he is mine. And he knows that. And in many ways, this is the heart of Christianity. We're not just speaking about a God out there somewhere, but we're speaking about someone who is, I am his, and he is mine. My Jesus, my Savior. So it's a really personal psalm of a very personal experience. And David is saying, God has done great things for me, and I want other people to know that as well. So what God has done for him, David puts in a song. How do we know this is a song? Well, all the psalms were songs. They were the hymn book of the New Testament church. And we know from the beginning, underneath where it says Psalm 62, and before you get to verse 1, we see that this is written for the director of music, for a man called Jeduthun. It's a psalm of King David, but he's going to hand it over to Jeduthun, and Jeduthun is the director of music of Israel. King David had appointed him, and we read in Chronicles that Jeduthun was the chief musician who was to organize worship in the pre-kind of temple that David built. Jeduthun was responsible for the trumpets, for the cymbals, and for all instruments of sacred song. So David puts this down, he writes this song, he puts it to music, he hands it over to Jeduthun, and he's saying, Jeduthun, you've got to teach the people to sing this. Because this song can be your song. And then you can tell everybody, this is your song. David loved music, and David loved song. He loved wine, women, and song, but that's another story. He loved music and he loved song. And very often when David experienced God in a powerful way, a kind of rush of musical elation came to him and he had to write it down. And he had to set it to music so that other people would sing it. And this testimony can be our testimony. And this psalm can be our psalm. What God did for David, God can do for us. So let's consider then, what was David's condition when he wrote this psalm, or any thinking about what happened? Well, it was a weak condition. David at this time felt strengthless and vulnerable and powerless. Verse 3 is how he felt. How long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down? This leaning wall, this tottering fence. That's how he felt, a leaning wall, a tottering fence. I guess this picture could be any one of our gardens over the past few years. And it might still be your garden at this very moment. The tottering fence, blown over, not completely gone down, but it's tottering, it's unsafe, and at any moment it could fall to the floor. And David felt just like this. I'm a tottering fence, he said. His life seemed so uncertain, precarious, and unpredictable. And he just felt any time he's going to collapse. That's how David felt. And we can feel like that at times as well, for all kinds of different reasons. Physically, our body can get worn out. We can have an illness or a condition or a virus or a disease, and it can wipe us out. Mentally, there comes times we can't think straight. Maybe there's problems at work or in your life, and you just seem to be going around in circles trying to solve them. Emotionally, we can be very fragile. Our reactions can be sharp and unsanctified. We can give in to pressure and stress, and we cry for no reason at all, seemingly. And spiritually as well. We try to pray, we try to read our Bibles, but it seems like heaven is not open to us. You can worship, but it doesn't seem to be like there's any connection. You can sing songs of praise, but they can seem just words. And your heart is like melted away like lipstick on a radiator. It's just... Hold that happens. So it can feel like your life is a wreck, that you've just about to crash down. If you're not crashed, you feel like you can be. This tottering fence, this too wobbly creme brulee. So why did David get into this condition? Whatever it was that he felt like this tottering fence, whether it was physical or mental or emotional or spiritual, or maybe all four of those together, why did he get like that? Well, David tells us his reason in verse 3 and 4. He says, how long will you assault me? Would all of you throw me down, this leaning wall, this tottering fence? Surely they intend to topple me from my lofty place. They take delight in lies. With their mouth they bless, but in their hearts they curse. David was surrounded by enemies. And boy, did he have enemies, so many of them. You read about them in the Psalms a lot when he speaks about his enemies. There's Saul, there's Ish-bosheth, there's Absalom, there's Shimei. It must have been terrible to be surrounded by enemies who at any moment would assault him and were just speaking lies about him all the time. So they're cursing him. They're trying to throw him down. And David feels in the midst of all that. And he says, it seems to be working. I'm about to crash. So that's what it was like for David. And maybe hard to put ourselves in a situation of being surrounded by so many enemies. But that's how David felt. But what is it for us? Well, I doubt it's real enemies for us. But it can be relationships. Sometimes relationships can be the best thing in the world. Other times, they can go all horribly wrong, and they can make you feel like really fragile and a tottering fence. Relationship problems are the worst kind of problems. They can leave you with a bad self-image. They can do your mind in. They can almost destroy your soul. And maybe for us, that's what it is. Relationships that we have, even maybe in the family, even between husband and wife, or parents and children, or children and parents, they can make you feel like a tottering fence. Or maybe we can get like this because we are our own worst enemy. Maybe we're just being silly with our sleep or our diet, and it's leading to tiredness. Or maybe we feel like the world depends upon us, that kind of proud thought. And it can all get to us, and we can feel like this tottering fence about to crash. But maybe there's an even deeper reason than all this. I do believe that there are times when God actually has to bring us to an end of ourselves, because we can trust ourselves and our planning and strategy and programs too much. And we can become really proud about what we've designed and what we've put together. And surely that will work. And there are times when God actually has to break our strength and smash our pride and to get rid of our self-reliance so that we just have to totally trust in him. God had to do this for the Apostle Paul. The Apostle Paul was a very able man. He had real missionary vision and strategy as well. He had plans galore. But God gave him a thorn in the flesh. And we're never told what that thorn in the flesh was. And the Apostle Paul didn't like it one bit. And he pleaded with God, "Take this away from me." But here's God's answer. "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And the Apostle Paul had to learn to live with a thorn in the flesh, with a weakness, but an increase of God's grace and power. And maybe that's the reason why we feel at times like a tottering fence. God is dealing with us for our good and other people's good as well. So here's David's condition then, this leaning wall, this tottering fence. What's he going to do about it? What's his testimony? I mean, if that's just what he told us, this is what I feel like, then wouldn't it be too encouraging? Well, it could be encouraging to know that a man of God felt like that in the Old Testament, but what can it teach us? What does David do so that he doesn't fully crash? And when we come to this point in our life, what should we do? Well, two things. The first thing David did was to renew his trust in God. Renew his trust in God. Look at verse 7 and 8. "My salvation and my honor depend on God. He is my mighty rock, my refuge. Trust in him at all times, you people. Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge." Trust in God, verse 8. Now, we often have to renew our trust in the Lord. Yes, when you become a Christian, you trust God for the first time ever. You put your life in his hands, which is a massive thing to do. You're saying that you can't save yourself, but you're trusting him to save you. So you trust him. You put your faith in the Lord Jesus Christ. But there are certain times in our lives when we have to renew that trust and that faith. We ask ourselves, do I really believe? How strong is my faith? Do I really trust God? And those times, then we have to pull ourselves to our senses, read the scriptures, and say, God hasn't changed. It's us that have changed. So we need to trust in him. You see, in verse 5, David says, "Yes, my soul, find rest in God." It's like he's talking to himself. It's not the first sign of madness. It's the first sign, or one of the first signs, of spiritual reality. Talk to your soul. "Yes, my soul, find rest in God." Come on. So he's trusting the Lord. And he's trusting God that God will bring him through this. And that God will not let him crash. That though he stumble, he will not fall. So he's trusting the Lord. And the Lord is the right one to trust. David does mention here some wrong things that people trust. For example, verse 9. "Surely the lowborn are but a breath, the highborn are but a lie. If weighed on a balance, they are nothing. Together they are only a breath." For sure, we need people to help us, but we don't put our ultimate trust in people. No matter who they are, whether they're lowborn or whether they're highborn, no matter what class of society they've got, no matter who they are or what they've done or what accreditations they might have or how much money they've got in the bank, we don't trust people ultimately because they're but a breath. And that word for breath is just like vapor. They're gone. They're here. They're gone. So we need people, but our ultimate trust is not in people. Trust in the Lord. What's more, in verse 10, David mentions some more things that we shouldn't put our trust in when we feel right down. Do not trust in extortion or put vain hope in stolen goods. Though your riches increase, do not set your heart on them. So extortion, stolen goods, riches. Don't trust them. Now, I think it's a temptation for lots of people, all of us, to trust in the wrong things. But I should imagine in the business world, those three things are very easy to put your trust in when things go wrong. So when your company is crumbling or when your business is in trouble, it might be very easy to trust extortion or stolen goods. When your department has failed and it hasn't reached its targets, and you've really got to get your department to team to reach its targets because the boss is coming, then I can imagine it would be very easy to do the wrong things. But that is a false trust. And ultimately, that will cause us to crash. So David says, don't trust extortion, don't trust stolen goods, don't trust riches. Trust God, verse 8. Trust in him at all times, the best of times, the worst of times. Trust in him. And the reason why we can trust God is because, as he puts it at the end of verse 8, God is our refuge. He also calls God a rock and a fortress. These are David's favorite symbols of God. A rock, a refuge, and a fortress. God is our ever-present help in a time of trouble. He's a rock, a refuge, and a fortress. So David trusts God. He's like a tottering fence. He's about to crash. He's about to have a train wreck in his life. But he doesn't. Why? Because he trusts God. Do you know, there's certain evidence here that David is trusting God. The evidence is in verse 7 that he says, my salvation and my honor depend upon God. Salvation, short term, God will bring me through this. He will save me from this mess. Salvation, long term, God will save me eternally. My salvation doesn't come from myself. I can't even keep myself up. My salvation comes from God. He's able to rescue us. And honor, my honor, depend upon you. That's really interesting that David should say this. My honor depends upon God. You know, as you read through the Psalms, David has this, well, it's almost like an anxiety that he would never be put to shame. He mentions it so often. Do not let me be put to shame. And David dreaded being put to shame. He wanted honor, but honor in the right way. But he was in no position to honor himself. He was like a tottering fence. So where's his honor going to come from? Who's going to make him something? Who's going to do something with his life? My honor depends upon God. The Apostle Peter said, humble yourself under God's mighty hand, and in due time, he will exalt you. So these are evidences that he's trusting the Lord. My salvation comes from God. God will exalt me at the right time, and in his time, my honor depends upon him. And then a third evidence that he was trusting in God is in verse 8. He prayed, pour out your hearts to him. It's a wonderful expression of prayer, to pour out your heart. What is prayer? Prayer is far more than words. Prayer comes from the heart. There's a lady in the Old Testament called Hannah. She ended up being Samuel's mother. But there was a time in her life when she felt like a tottering fence, a leaning wall. So she went to the temple of her day, and she prayed. The high priest saw her praying, but he noticed that no words were coming out of her mouth. So he thinks that she's been drinking too much, and he rebukes her. But she says, do not misunderstand me. I'm praying to God in my heart. And that's what true prayer is. And maybe David here, when he says, pour out your heart to him, maybe David has run out of words in his condition. Or maybe this is too deep for words, and all he can do is groan. But he can pray. Pour out your hearts to him. For God is the one who can restore this tottering fence and this leaning wall. And the first thing that David does in this fragile, vulnerable condition is to renew his trust in God. It's the second thing he does as well. And we can do this too. He not only trusted God, but he rested in God. He tells us this twice. Look at verse 1. Truly my soul finds rest in God. My salvation comes from him. Truly he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will never be shaken. So verse 1, truly. Verse 2, truly. Truly, truly, I say to you that my soul finds rest in God. Verse 5, yes, my soul find rest in God. My hope comes from him. The yes is an affirmation. Yes, this is what will happen. Verse 6, truly, he is my rock and my salvation. He is my fortress. I will not be shaken. So the end of verse 2, I will never be shaken. The end of verse 6, I will not be shaken. Why? Because he's found his rest in God. My faith has found a resting place, not in device or creed. I'll trust the ever-living one. His blood alone shall plead. He trusts in God. And it's his soul that trusts in God. You notice that? Verse 2, truly my soul find rest in God. Verse 5, yes, my soul. This is his inner being. This is all that he is. This is the seat of his emotions. It's your soul is the place that becomes happy or gets sad or becomes cross or gets fearful. It's your inner being. And David is saying, with all of my inner being, I'm going to find rest in God. Do you know, you rest in what you trust in. David has said, I'm trusting in God, therefore I can rest in God. You've got to rest in the right thing. If you're trusting in extortion or stolen goods, then you're going to fear the knock at the door. You're going to wonder what's going to happen when you open up your email, what kind of email you're going to get. You're going to fear a phone call. You're going to fear a text. If you're trusting in the wrong things, unethical things, extortion, stolen goods, then you're not going to find rest in those. They'll make you agitated and jumpy. And likewise, riches, if you trust your riches. Now, God gives riches. It's a wonderful thing. But you don't trust your riches. For if you trust your riches, you'll be all agitated by world economy. So we don't trust and rest in the wrong thing. Rest in what you trust in and trust in the right thing. I trust in God, therefore I can rest in God. Now you do that, don't you? What do you trust in? Let's give some a silly example. Okay, Michael McIntyre says he trusts the fridge. Many of you haven't got a clue because you haven't seen that sketch, but it's a really funny sketch. I trust the fridge. The fridge is always there. Well, what about your chair, your favorite chair? Maybe it's been a busy day. What day isn't a busy day, you say? It's been a busy day. The kids have been playing up, and you're absolutely exhausted, or you've been out at work, and it's been a really hassly day, and the day now is coming to the end, and you sit in your favorite chair. You trust your chair. You rest in what you trust. This word trust in the Hebrew can be translated silence. Sometimes you just want that, don't you? I'm sitting down for a bit of peace and quiet. Silence. And that's what David is saying. I am trusting in God, and therefore I can rest and be at peace with God. Be still, my soul. The Lord is on your side. I suppose in a more serious situation, those who are victims of domestic violence, what can they trust in? Where can they rest? They can't find their rest at home. They might dread being at home, the fists or the words or the emotional cruelty that someone might be giving another person. So they often end up, victims of domestic violence often end up in places of refuge. And when they get there, they can rest because they know they're going to be safe. It's a refuge. They can rest in what they trust. God is our refuge and our strength. You trust in him, you can be at total peace. You know, peace, perfect peace in this dark world of sin? Yes, the Spirit of Jesus whispers peace within. And you can have that peace as you trust in God. So here's the second thing that David does. He rests in what he trusts. In his disturbed, sad condition of virtual collapse and crash, David finds peace and quiet in God. But is God able to help? Can God really restore us? Yes, he can. David says in verse 11, "One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard." That's a little bit like us saying, "I'll tell you once, I'll tell you twice." It's the same thing, but I'll say it once, I'll say it again. "One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard." What is it? "Power belongs to you, God, and with you, Lord, is unfailing love." What a tremendous balance in our God. If it was just power belongs to God, then we would think, wow, he might destroy us. If it was just unfailing love is with God, then we might think we can get away with anything. But power belongs to God, and with God is unfailing love. This is our God. He's full of power. Power belongs to him. For yours is the power and the glory forever and ever. God has power. Therefore, he is able to rescue David because he has power. God has unfailing love. Therefore, he is willing to rescue David. So his power and his love work together to bring David out of this condition. So they can shore him up, he can prop him up, he can support him, so he's not like a tottering fence anymore, because God is powerful and God is loving. He is able and he is willing. One day, there was a really poor man covered in leprosy, and he couldn't get rid of his leprosy, so he makes his way to Jesus of Nazareth. And he says to Jesus, "Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Are you willing? Because you can. Are you loving? Because you've got the power. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean." You know what Jesus said? You can read it in Mark chapter 1. Jesus said, "I am willing. Be clean. I've got the power and I've got the ability." And this is our God. What's more, David knows that God is just. Look at verse 12. You reward everyone according to what they have done. That is not talking about our eternal salvation, for that is by grace alone. This reward according to what they have done is God's fairness and God's justice. If you trust in the wrong things, God will reward you for that, but you won't like it one bit. But if you trust in the right thing, God will reward you for that. And he will bring you through that condition. Scriptures tell us that God is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And in God's justice and fairness, those who put their trust in him and rest in him will find salvation and peace and quiet. So here's David's testimony. He's written it in a song for us all to sing. I'd love to have known what the tune was. He's on the verge of collapse and disaster. His body and spirit are in a bad way. He's closing down. But no, we know what David did. He trusted in the Lord. He rested in the Lord. And we can do the same, exactly the same. For this God is our God forever and ever. Do you know, this book of Psalms, as we've mentioned, it was the early church's hymn book. And Jesus read the Psalms. He read the Psalms often. Jesus sung the Psalms. We know that for a fact. John 18 tells us that Jesus sung the Psalms. So Jesus would have sung Psalm 62. Jesus would have meditated on Psalm 62. He would have try to understand how David felt, and he himself would have known the reality of the experience that David had. Because there came a point when Jesus felt like a leaning wall and a tottering fence. In Gethsemane, my God, take this cup away from me. In Pilate's judgment hall, in the judgment hall of the high priest, there, as the cruel Roman guards scourged him, beat him, pull out his beard and spat in his face and punched him with their fists. How did Jesus feel then? A leaning wall, a tottering fence. On the cross, it's total weakness. We read in 2 Corinthians, Jesus was crucified in weakness. So how did he feel? Just like this. But how did he come through that? He trusted in God. Even his enemy says that. He trusts in the Lord. And he rested in God. How do we know that? Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. And when you commit yourself to someone, you're resting in them. Here, I give myself to you. So the Lord Jesus Christ knew the reality of this psalm. He knew what it was to trust God. He knew what it was to rest in God. And he knew what it was to 1, 2, 3 days later come back from the dead. David's psalm is true to many, many people in this church and in my life too. But may it also be true that we don't still live life like a tottering fence. May it be so that we trust God and that we rest in him. Be still, my soul. The Lord is on your side.